Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Welcome to the Seminary Explorers. My name is Nelson Strobry, and my guest today is Pastor Dale Lynn, who is the Jazz Pastor Emeritus of St. Peter's Lutheran Church in New York City. He's here today on campus to talk about his ministry, but also he is a recipient of this year's Gettysburg Seminary Alumni Award in Specialized Ministry. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
Thank you.
To begin with, I know that Gettysburg is in rural South Central Pennsylvania, and I'd like to know, how did you get to New York City? Was that your first call?
Yes, it was. It was my first call. Fortunately, I had an intern year. I was one of the, when I had the intern year, it was optional for students.
Oh, that's right.
But about a dozen of us managed to put it into our schedules, and mine was in Hollis, Queens, the Holy Trinity Lutheran Church. Which had a congregation of about 600 people at the time.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And ironically, the pastor there, Dr. Ivan Sterner, grew up outside of Gettysburg on a farm. This Sterner name is famous around here. And he retired here as well and passed away some years ago. And then he had a modern old schoolhouse and refurbished it and he's an amazing person. And I was there an intern year for over two summers and the year in between.
And then,
ironically, when came back from my senior year and graduation, between New Year's and Easter, an opening turned up at St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Manhattan.
Right.
And so I offered to be a candidate, and Dr. Alfred Beck was the president.
That's right, I remember
at
him.
At the time. And I went up and met with him, and then the church council, and invited back for a trial sermon Sunday after Easter or something, and was accepted. Oh, that's what put me in New York City.
Oh, okay.
And I graduated here in the seminary. I was ordained on June 3rd from the Maryland Synod.
That's right, you're from Maryland.
And Frank Fife was the Synod president. He wanted me to take a church at Mount Joy in Harney.
Oh, yes, I know that. Yeah,
little parish, about 10 miles from here, maybe, yes.
Right.
But I had my heart set on going to New York.
Going back to New York.
And he had baptized my parents. I'd rather he married my parents and baptized me.
Uh-huh.
And also ordained me. So that's ironic.
Yes.
It was a very warm experience here. A lot of things happened here. But I feel I've been back several times. My family lives 30 miles in Maryland, Woodsboro, Frederick County.
Right.
And it's amazing how urban Gettysburg has become.
That's right. It has certainly changed. I know.
With the communications and worldwide, you're not far from national news. It's all over.
That's right, exactly. And there are many people from the area who commute to the Washington area,
yes,
and Baltimore area,
yes,
to go to work.
There's an urban frame of mind.
Right.
But it's also a rural touch, too.
That's right. Very much so.
Suburban.
Very much so. Could you share with us how did you get, you had the call to St. Peter's. How did you get involved in jazz ministry?
Well, before that, my specialized ministry goes beyond prior to jazz.
Oh, really?
Yes. I was in charge of young adults, and this was in the mid-60s, and we had a young adults group. We had brunch every Sunday in somebody's apartment. But at that time, prior to that time, there were like two types of restaurants. You had your shot and beer bars.
Right.
Bars are called the Irish bars. And although all of them weren't Irish, he sort of took that vent. And then you had your expensive restaurants, and not much in between. And until there was a place called, which became famous, T.J. Friday's, and they're all over the country. And and they became meeting places for young adults. And there was a place between us, my apartment. I had a studio apartment just three blocks from the church. And there was a place I used to stop off at occasionally for a cocktail and conversation with the bartender there, who had had a year at a seminary in the Rome Catholic Seminary.
So you had so you had some conversation.
Yes, and he said, "Dale," I said, "I bet I speak to counsel more people than you do on a daily basis."
Ah,
and I got to thinking, and I had the role of a bartender, and the more I thought about it, the more I thought it was had some possibilities for a specialized ministry to young adults where they hang out and not expect them to come to church.
Exactly.
And also that in my experience was that people felt more comfortable talking to me across a bar than they say would in a church office with crosses and stuff hanging around and the certificates and things. It's kind of intimidating, you know.
Particularly for those who have had no experience with the church at all.
Yes. And so I wrote a proposal for the church and submitted it to the Metropolitan Synod. Thought I was nuts, of course.
Well, it was a little bit different.
Yeah, it was, yes. But I kept pushing it. And, of course, I believed in it strongly. And so after I was at St. Peter's a couple of years, before that, I was there alone. Because a senior pastor, after 1 year, left to go to Berlin to take the American Lutheran Church session there, Walter Bock. And so there was a 15-month period where I was the only person there at the 54th in Lexington.
Yes, I remember it well.
They had a service every day at noontime, spoken mass, and then and service on Wednesday night, and two on Sunday. at that time, and they had a guest preacher in for the 11 a.m. service on Sundays, and one of them became a good friend was Edmund Stimley.
Oh yeah,
who taught homiletics
and
Union for a long
right.
time, and was the preacher on the Protestant Hour, the Lutheran preacher on Protestant Hour, and he was like a hero of mine. and I was in seminary, and though I'd never met him until I was at St. Peter's. And so after the service on Sunday, I would take him out to brunch at B.J. Clark's somewhere. And so we got to know each other, and he was a big influence on me.
Oh, okay.
And also Dr. Charles Felsch, who was pastor of Christ Lutheran Church. He had been pastor of Luther Place Memorial
in Washington,
D.C., which was where Pastor Genzel's first parish was, as assistant with Charles Felsch there. And that's where he met his wife, Audrey, who was in the congregation. And so a lot of connections. And while I was in on my intern year, I had met Pastor Genzel and tagged along with him to various jazz clubs. He'd love to take other ministers or students with him.
Yeah, for our listening audience,
yes.
Pastor Genzel was the jazz pastor.
He was. He was at the time at Advent Lutheran Church at, I think, 93rd and Broadway.
90, right, exactly.
And so when Ralph Peterson came to St. Peter's Church, one of his conditions was that Pastor Genzel's jazz ministry would be based there.
Mm-hmm.
The services have gotten large at Advent, he was spending more time with the jazz musicians than with members of the congregation, his ministry was based at St. Peter's in 1965 and 67, along that era, because we had, the first big memorial we had, the funeral we had, was John Coltrane's.
Okay.
And St. Peter's seated like 1,000 people, and whereas Advent was only a few hundred. And this was like lines around the block. And later on, with Billy Strayhorn, who was Duke Ellington's right-hand person, and wrote Take the A-Train and so many other tunes. And Billy, he had cancer and wasn't coming out of the hospital. He knew that. And so he had his piano set down to St. Peter's.
I remember
the musicians that we still use it
for all these
over
years,
50 years,
right?
Been using it, but in the meantime, I was. I also went to. I had the opportunity to be in the first class of urban ministry, and master's class at the New York Theological Seminary, which Bill Weber had just become president. George W. Weber.
Exactly. It seems to me that as you lived in the city, you became more immersed in the city.
Yes.
And so what brought you to do the graduate work in urban studies?
Well, when I came to St. Peter's, it was full of very idealistic. I still am pretty well. But I thought I was God's man for Manhattan. I certainly will. That thought faded pretty quickly after being there a few months. And so I'd read his couple of books by Bill, and I've always respected him immensely. So I was able to get into the he had two majors for masters from STM, pastoral counseling,
mm-hmm.
and the other was urban ministry. And so I opted for the urban ministry course, it was fantastic. Finished the studies there in 1970.
Okay.
And in the meantime, I was supporting myself by tending bar. Ralph Peterson became pastor of St. Peter's, and also and also brought in his own team for assistant pastors.
Right. You know? Okay.
And so I was still in the congregation and helping out, but I was not on this.
Not
staff,
on the staff.
Physically. So I had to. So I was getting low on money, and I put my last $300 into a course on bartending in Midtown at Times Square.
Right.
And the person who was teaching the course, it was like 3 weeks, he had been the head bartender at the old Cotton Club in Harlem.
Oh.
It was quite a unique experience. And so finished that, and had a few one-night jobs here and there at places. They tried to get you a job, too. And a jazz musician who had played at Jazz Vespers told me there was an opening at Miss Lacey's Supper Club right beside Carnegie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And so he introduced me to Barbara Lacey, who had been a singer with Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five in the 40s, 1940s, 50s. And so I was the day bartender. It was right across from the Art Students League, too, and beside Carnegie Hall.
Right.
They had jazz every night. One of the doorman was the great Johnny Hartman, who was my favorite male jazz singer of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And musicians would come in there, other musicians, after they played at other clubs, because we were open till 4 every morning.
Right, that is New York. and you're interacting with all these,
yes,
these musicians, jazz musicians,
yes,
in particular.
And, so it was Louis Armstrong and his wife came in one night, and Duke Ellington could stop in occasionally if he played at the Riverboat or somewhere in the area. Of course, he lived in town. Joe Lewis, the boxer,
yeah,
former heavyweight champion, he and his wife lived down the street at 7th Avenue in a hotel there. And he was an old friend of Miss Lacey's. He came in frequently to talk to Barbara. So I worked there for about a year.
May I ask, did you share with people that you were a clergyman?
Yes, I did. It generated some publicity.
Huh.
I wasn't looking for it, but I was on To Tell the Truth, that quiz show.
Yes.
And also What's My Line.
Oh, I remember those, yeah.
Yeah. So, and they're still going. They run them.
Repeats.
Yes, they do. So, and so I kept submitting my application for the Synod.
The proposal for this type of ministry.
Yeah, so I was doing a workshop at a Synod convention, and since I was not at a parish, I was on the on leave from call status.
That's right.
You remember that? And it was expiring at that convention, and they were going to vote on my proposal, and Dr. Paul White was the
Senate
Secretary.
Yeah, I remember him. Yes.
Jim Grafe was the president. And so I worked, tended bar all night, And after about 5 o'clock in the morning, I'd rented a car, reserved, and drove up to the Catskills, where the
convention was going to be held.
At the Stevensville Country Club, yeah, that's where it was held. And got there in time for luncheon to do a workshop. And so one of the other assistants to this bishop came over and said, "We're going to we're not going to vote on your call at the executive meeting. You'll be dropped from the clerical role, and we'll pick you up again like in 6 months or something."
Oh my!
And I said, "You are?" I said, "This was at lunch, and I took a napkin." And I said, "Would you give this to your boss?" And I said, "If you don't vote on this proposal, you can take the church and shove it."
You said that?
Yes. I wrote on a napkin. So
I'm sure that was startling to them.
So it was. And so they came up for discussion, I heard, and Pastor Genzel was on the board of directors, and so was Walter Bock, who had since returned to New York and was the liaison between the congregations and the synod for Wagner College.
Right.
And and I think they discussed this for about several hours, and finally voted on it, and it was elected by one vote, or 7-6 or something.
Wow.
And just before dinner, Paul White comes to me and told me the results and said, "Have you got some time?" He said, "Come back to your room, and we don't know how to phrase this call. Could you write something up?" He said, and if you can avoid it, don't use the word bartender."
Yeah, right. I would say that would raise some eyelids, from the constituency.
At that time, I was called to a 4-year term to minister to young people. Young adults in their times and places of leisure,
and that's really creative.
Yes, and so after that was the best way I could put it, and to be inclusive, and to what it was, and it was voted on at the full convention the next morning, and passed. So that's all I got. My call to special service, and then it was renewed also later on.
Okay.
And in my tending bar, through that, I got into management as well.
Right.
Drifted into that, and finally ownership as a partner in the Bitter End down on Bleecker Street.
Wow.
So, which was one of the most famous clubs.
Right, indeed.
It was a mecca for folk musicians. Peter, Paul, and Mary got their start there, and many others, comedians and singers.
As you describe all of these varied facets of ministry,
yes,
that you've had, I read somewhere where someone described you as a risk taker. Do you agree with that assessment of your years of ministry?
Well, I put it along the line, yes. I was I think, really, whatever we do, there was a point, there are several points in our lives where we take a risk.
Yes.
And where it comes down to doing or saying what you believe and acting on it. And so words can only go so far, but they do count.
They do. Yeah, words do count.
Know that.
But also actions.
Yes, sure. Actions. So I've taken risks at every level. I'm proud also that I in this was a specialized ministry that didn't cost the church a cent.
Hmm.
I was able to generate income in my work.
Yes.
And then eventually I paid for my own upkeep and things, and I also later on, at the bitter end, I was at the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
When the owner who owned the two buildings the club was in, sold one to my partner and one to me. So he took advantage of that, and then when I went back to St. Peter's to help out on a volunteer basis, eventually. But before that, when I left the bitter end, I sold up my interest there with 2 years left on the lease.
Okay.
And the place. And because the bar in the bottom of my building, which is called the dugout, the owners were retiring, and I took it over and opened and did all the renovations and called it Preacher's Cafe. Called it a fun cafe for the immoral minority.
Now, did that attract young people or the middle-aged and older or a cross-section of people?
Yeah, it did. It attracted mostly young adults, and also it's a very youthful area with the NYU. It's right in the middle of NYU.
Right.
Campus is there, so... And that's like 50,000 people.
Exactly.
And even a larger post-grad mm-hmm. thing. They're the School of Education. There's 35,000 or something.
Yeah.
And I got to know Bill Moody, who was a pastor of a Judson Church.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very progressive person, and even had some of his church council meetings in my Preacher's Cafe and a back room.
Okay. I'd like to ask you, as you look over your years in ministry, is there one, what might you say or would you consider the highlight of those years for you?
Well, meeting such a variety of people, one night, especially I was closing up the bar, and at 4:30 in the morning, and everybody was gone, and I'd forgotten to lock the front door, and this fella comes in a tie-dye T-shirt,
right,
sits down at the end of the bar, and says, "Can I still get a beer?" He says, "I know it's late, and I'm wanted in 4 states for failure to move along." It was a George Carlin.
Oh, my.
George Carlin.
Oh, my.
I had recognized this. Sure, George, yeah. We had beer together, and, oh, you got a pool table back there. You want a place of pool? So we were in a playing pool till 7 o'clock in the morning. like a one-person concert, you know. Right. I was laughing so much.
Oh, my. It's fascinating. Particularly in New York City, right. where you see a cross-section of the world, and then to be in a place and to be a part of a location which people came across these people.
Yeah. The street has had electricity all the time, one day I had brunch. I started Sunday brunch, a Baroque brunch with the Baroque trio, and I had a thing go for Baroque at the other end. And one afternoon, Sunday afternoon, Ingrid Bergman and two other ladies came in for brunch on their way to the village gate.
And
also, I remember serving in another Sunday afternoon John Lennon and Yoko a drink at the bar there. And Bob Dylan started his Rolling Thunder review in our club. Ramblin' Jack Elliott was playing there, and he and Dylan were friends, and good friends. There at a table, after the second set was Dylan, Bobby Newirth, who had been his road manager and wrote the song Mercedes-Benz for Janis Joplin, was there, and he was going on. They decided to make a tour. Roger McGuinn of the Byrds, Joni Mitchell, and Joan Baez, and also Ronnie Blakely, who had played there the week before.
Yeah.
She was a star of Nashville.
Right.
And then during that week, we were on the cover of Time and Newsweek at the same time. And there were lines around the block.
that certainly promotes publicity, gives you publicity. Yeah. When you started with the Young Adult Ministry many years ago, you stated that was the place you wanted to bring the church to where the people were.
Right, right.
And it seems to me that throughout those years of ministry, you have been at the forefront of bringing the church, to the people.
Right.
And that has become a significant part of who you are and certainly one identification of the church.
And that's been... there's not so many things that have happened over the years. Dave Van Ronk, the guitarist, teacher, also, he was honing up Dylan's guitar skills in Washington Square Park in the afternoons, and Dylan slept on Dave Van Ronk's sofa when he came to New York for the first few months. Dave, he died a few years ago.
No.
His biography was called The Mayor of McDougal Street. I remember the first time I served him a drink, he ordered Jameson, and he said, "Dave, would you like water, ice, soda with that?" He says, "No, Dale." He says, "It's one of the few things in life that need no accompaniment."
That's marvelous. That's marvelous. Sorry. Well, I can't believe our time has gone so fast. But you certainly have contributed to the life of the church and to the legacy and to the legacy of Gettysburg Seminary. And so it is no wonder that you are awarded one of the alumni awards for this year's class. So I want to thank you for being on campus.
Yes.
Yeah. For the Seminary Explorers, This is Nelson Strobert. My guest today has been Pastor Dale Lynn, who is the Jazz Pastor Emeritus of St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Manhattan, in New York City. And he was talking about his years of ministry to the jazz community and as the bartender pastor as well. But Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobert. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.